Introducing Elon Adler, 9 o'clock sharp on a Thursday morning as we zip along with Zoom with the Frog English Colo. Rav Adler will elucidate us with the eye-catching Shuvot. And then later tonight, 7:30 p.m., this is a double header. We're going to have a Parsha Shiva, Rav Adler. The bullpen is warming up as we speak. Take it away, Rav Adler.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your kind intro. Yeah, the bullpen. I appreciate that term. Anyway, I thought I would dedicate today's shiur to the memory of Joe Lieberman, former senator of Connecticut, who I was reading yesterday. He fell the day before, and I don't know what the complications were, but they were cl clearly severe. As he passed away yesterday, and
Against Schumer's speech, that's what happened.
oh, he did not like it. I saw a
No,
clip
he
of
did
him
not like
talking
it at
about it a week
all.
ago. Ooh.
This is the way things go now. Joe just happened to fall, and
Oh.
Schumer's in back of him as his showmare, but that's the way it goes. I mean,
Oh, so you think Chuck had to do something with it? Had
I
something to
don't
do with
know. I don't
it?
know.
Yeah. Wow, it's really something. Well, I just wanted to begin with a couple of connections that I had with Joe Lieberman. He grew up in the congregation in Stamford, Connecticut, where I was an associate rabbi for 7 years. By the time I got there, he was still very actively involved in Connecticut politics. But I just wanted to mention a couple of things about him. Nothing about his politics. I don't know enough about it, and people agree and disagree and all that kind of stuff. Just a couple of anecdotes, if I may. When I got to Stamford, Connecticut, to Agudath Shalom, that was the name of the shul he grew up in. And when I got there in July of 1986, right after I got my smicha from YU, and
That's the shul he grew up in.
was that?
That's the shul that he grew up in.
He grew up in that synagogue. And the head rabbi there was a rabbi, Joe Ehrenkranz, who was his lifelong rabbi. In any case, the very first high holiday season, on Kol Nidre night, the senior rabbi invited the associate rabbi to speak upstairs. It was the only time during the high holidays. Otherwise, the associate rabbi spoke down in the chapel, which seated about 350, 400 people. So that was not a slouchy crowd either. But upstairs were 2,000 people, 800 permanent seats. They opened up the doors to the social hall and set up another 1,200 seats. It was always packed. Anyway, I mentioned this because after my first Rosh Hashanah Kol Nidre upstairs, people had the custom of coming up to the bima, wishing the good Happy New Year. Hope you have an easy fast and all that. And he and his wife Hadassah were part of that crowd that came up to the bima. I had no idea who he was. I'm just there for a couple of months at that point. And she come over. Hi, Rabbi. We really enjoyed your remarks today. Thank you so much. Welcome, welcome. So thank you so much. What is your names? And he says, "My name is Joe Lieberman. This is my wife, Hadassah." I said, "Oh, very nice to meet you. So what do you do, Joe?" Again, I have no idea. What do you do, Joe? He says, "Oh, I'm the Attorney General of Connecticut." Oh, that's very nice to hear. Very nice to meet you. Anyway, since that moment, he was always just a very kind, sweet, gentle soul. Whenever he came back to the shul for any reason on a Shabbat to see his mother, who lived a little bit down the street, people just they considered him like, just the average Joe, no pun intended. And he was that easily accessible. He had no airs. He was just a very beloved, sweet kind of a gentleman that everybody felt comfortable with. I remember during my first few months there in that shul in Stamford, Connecticut, my secretary let me know that I had two calls that were waiting. One was from Joe Lieberman, because he wanted to discuss his father's unveiling. And the other call was from Dr. Ruth Westheimer, with whom I was in touch about speaking to the teens in our shul. And they were both on the line. And which one would I like to take first? So, well, I never told anybody which call I took first. It's thank you for not asking. But yeah, so that was one of my first things to do at that shul in Stanford, was to do his father's unveiling. Again, he would come off it. What was that?
Beyond the statute of limitations already, you could say.
Yeah, so I took Ruth Westheimer's call first. Anyway, the very Shomer Shabbos family. There were many, many articles talking about the fact that if he had to vote in the Senate on a Shabbos, he would walk. I heard several times that Al Gore was his Shabbos goy, whatever he needed to do. And he was probably more successful with that than with other things. When Joe Lieberman was running for Senate, he had a very uphill climb. He was running against a current governor whose name was Lowell Weicker, 6 foot 4. The same, he was as tall as Bill Clinton, also 6 foot 4, as tall as Sir Moses Montefiore, who happened to be 6 foot 4. Anyway, as he was running, he would ask if I would come with him on some campaign trips.
Montefiore was closer to 7 feet.
What is that?
Moshe Montefiore was closer to 7 feet.
Well, it depends how many people were in the room. I thought he was 6 foot 4, but
No,
it's
it's taller. It was huge
thought
for
he was
them.
short. You sure?
Yeah.
No, I heard he was rather tallish, but
Very.
okay, could have been. Anyway, so Joe Lieberman at that time started out doing a lot of home campaigning. 50, 60, 70 people in big houses, and you would often ask me to come and maybe say a few words about him, about his life in the synagogue, etc. So I would do that, and very happily so. The night he the day he announced that he was running for Senate, the family also asked me to come to the house to be for the announcement, and also the night that he was the night of the elections in Hartford, they asked if I would come along with them and spend the time in their suite, which I did. And when he announced that he won, he only won by about 10,000 votes, so it was a bit of a squeaker. And the last thing I'll mention is that there was a school in Stamford, Connecticut, called the Bicultural Day School. Bicultural Day School is your typical day school: secular studies, Judaic studies, etc. And usually, the principal would invite Joe Lieberman to come, say a few words, and to also lead the benching. You would have Joe lead the benching, which he often did without a bencher, as far as I remember. Sang the whole thing, and I remember asking the principal, "Why are you inviting him to lead the benching? He's capable of so much more." And he said, "Well, I knew that he would make a few remarks anyway before he benched, and I wanted to our students to see that somebody of that stature is somebody who is well entrenched in Jewish knowledge, Jewish education, Shomer Shabbos, Jewish life, and here's the senator who knows the entire benching, and he can sing it by heart." So I thought that, I don't know if I would have thought of that, but that was a very interesting way to look at it. And the year after he became senator, his mother, Marcia, she should rest in peace, she held a big kiddush for him at the shul, the Welcome Home Joe Kiddush. Packed, packed, packed. Not a seat in the house. And a lot of guests, a lot of glitterati came to that one. Anyway, he was a tremendous source of pride for the shul. He was treated like the everyman when he was there. A lot of people knew him personally, so I just wanted to pay a personal tribute to him and to his leadership. And there are many Jewish organizations. I've already read their remarks on websites as to what he meant to them, how he mentored many people, including national leaders. Anyway, in my opinion, he was a really good guy. Again, apart from his politics, I don't know enough about it, but as a gentleman and a scholar, I think he wrote a few books. He wrote a book on the Shabbat, which I think was a good seller. maybe a bestseller, I don't know. Anyway, so I just want to take a few moments to pay my tribute to him, Le'ilui Nishmat Joe Lieberman. I don't remember his father's name, even though I did the unveiling for him, but that was many years ago. And his mother was Marcia, and he should rest in peace and receive his proper reward. Okay, do we have enough time left? Yes, we do. So today I took up a topic that Bruce suggested a couple of weeks ago, and that was the topic of baby namings, naming babies in Hebrew. We're not that interested in this year about English names. We're more interested about the Hebrew names. And there are so many questions about baby namings that I frankly was a little surprised myself. It was a little eye-catching for me to see how many facets there are to this whole issue of baby namings and how seriously many of our poskim take it. You know, it's not a light matter as to what you name your child, after whom, does a Hebrew name matter? Does it matter beyond wanting to honor somebody, remember somebody, etc.? Does the Hebrew baby naming do anything for anybody? Does it do anything for the child? Does it do anything for the one after whom the child is named? When parents name a baby, is it their own independent choice? Or is there some divine involvement going on as they give the name, as they decide on the name? Are there any halachot regarding how to name, what to name, when to name, what kind of a name? Does your name have any impact on your life or other lives? Should you have one Hebrew name or two? Do you name after the living or only after the dead? And what I found out after looking through several chapters of several books, as well as listening to two or three shiurim on this on various websites, that I would say these are more of guides. What we're going to talk about for the next time period is there are more guides, I think, than necessarily halachot. So if a posek was listening to the shiur, he might say, Ilana, I think you've got it all wrong. There are halachot about this, to which I would say, well, if you read the chapters that I did and you listened to the shiurim that I did, you would see that for every halacha, there's a counter halacha. In other words, there's a lot of opinions and a lot of disagreements about which ways to follow when you're naming, and when and how and who and what and all that. So, just about for every opinion I can give you in one way, I can find you an opinion that says the other way. So that's why I say, to me, a lot of this seems more like guidelines. But they are substantial poskim who have what to say about it.
There may be very serious ramifications regarding a get or a ketubah, in terms of legal documents
Yes.
that is used. I do have a close friend who the couple decided the name of the baby, and when the father got up there with the moil, he gave the baby the name that he preferred. And so that's what was announced, and that's the name. And I was kind of surprised that they couldn't sort of change that, but it appears that once the name is announced to the Brit, that's the name. I don't know. So I didn't know that. I mean,
Well, there was one instance that I read, which we'll get to, that spoke about if the father had a specific name in mind, and for one reason or other, he gave another name to the moel, who then announced it. One opinion says you keep that name. If the moel bobbled on the name that he was given, then you use the original name that was intended. Now, again, will you find other poskim that will say, oh no. You know, why do you saddle a kid with a name that wasn't intended for him? And they might be very lenient on that and say, no, you don't have to use that name because that's not the intended name.
not only
Or
that,
others would say, if there is divine assistance in what this kid is going to be named, if Hashem has something to do with it, if there's a Ruach HaKodesh, then the name that was bobbled probably was the actual name that he was meant to be named. So
I'm just wondering who would really know for later when the kid is married or on a legal document. I know my brother was born with the name, I was told, Huna.
Huna?
Unirachmiel. And in Hebrew school, meaning he's already 5 or 6 years old, they'd say Hunatuna, and he would like cry. So my parents and the teacher decided to call him Hanan. So Hanan Rachmiel.
Nice.
Now, I'm wondering if but if I'm the Brit, so I guess it doesn't have to stay with what's on the Brit because he's forever after used the name Hanan Rachmiel,
Yeah,
not.
I mean, there are those who say that to change the name to something a little bit more, from a Yiddish to a Hebrew or things of that nature, to change those names would not be a problem, especially if the name ends up to be an embarrassment. There's a lot that they say about that you don't give embarrassing names, names that are uncomfortable for the child, names that will cause any kind of ridicule, etc. Like you just gave a good example. Then you don't use those names, or you change it, or you give a second name that's a lot more glorious. But again, there are so many, I can't say exceptions to the rule because can't say there's so many rules about it. There's more guidelines which we're going to see. So when are Hebrew names used? Well, many of us know. It's important to know and remember those names when we make a mishaberach for somebody, when we have a ketubah or a get, when we change somebody's name because of terrible illness, hard situations, challenging lives. People may change their name or add a name for the El Malei Rachamim. Somebody passes away. Memorial prayers, names on a tombstone. We want to make sure that the names are accurate and the names are as given. I don't think I have to convince too many people here today that names are important and the meanings behind the names are important. So we're familiar with the notion that when names are given in the Torah, for example, there's often an accompanying reason why that name was given. Adam, why was he called Adam? Why was Moshe called Moshe? Avraham, Sarah, Yitzchak, Yaakov, the 12 Shvatim. Every time they were born, there's almost a reason for the name. Noach, why was Noach given the name Noach? And so on. So there is justification for the name that's given, and it appears not to be random. So already we get a good sense that this is an important conversation. Because names are they have a meaning and a purpose, and they have a background. So we have for example, regarding the names Haman and Esther. So the Gemara says Haman min haTorah minayin. Where do we find the name Haman in the Torah? And the name actually you don't find it. You don't find Haman. You find words like referring to the man. Haman, but you don't find,
I
or
have
Esther, where do you find the name Esther in the Torah? So these are allusions to us, Esther and Haman.
a book that's written by Tamar Ginden, who's a Persian linguist, and she goes pasuk by pasuk, explaining names and words and what they meant in Persian. And I always thought Haman was also, whatever. But she says that it means the wise one, the one. One with the good advice. That mean that that's a born name. That could have been a name given to him later, but that's clearly how he was viewed by the government up until his demise. But before reading that, I mean, in other words, reading what the Gemara says about a foreign name, that's like, chop suey refers to suey that got chopped up.
Yes, right.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the Gemara says about a foreign name
Right.
means that that's what it means, but.
No, so interestingly enough, when the Gemara says Haman min haTorah minayin, they refer to the question Hashem asked of Adam, Hamin ha'etz, is it from this tree that I told you not to eat from? Did you eat? And then there's a whole drasha on that. Rav Soloveitchik is a beautiful piece on that. Or Esther min haTorah minayin, where do you get that name? Aster, Astir et Panai. Anyway, so We don't have to convince
Absolutely.
each other that there is important aspect to why people name,
I mean,
and the names have a background.
Esther also is the Persian name from the Asherah.
Yes, right. And her actual name was Hadassah.
Ishtar. Well, we hope it is, but yeah,
We
that's
hope it
what
is.
it is. Ishtar, it's a certain pagan or Zoroastrian goddess, as Mordechai is an idol also. I mean, it's why Reb Leipzig says the book is somewhat of a satire by choosing these names, which are they're almost funny to hear. It jumps out. It should jump out.
Yeah.
Unusual thing to name Jews these names.
Right. And all those different categories of runners and wow, the whole Megillah's parsha, right? Besides the names of Haman's kids, you have all the Ashtaranim, all the runners and then this and that. Anyway,
Name is
so.
not name is not an identity of a person. It's a way of identifying them, rather. It's not their what they are. Their essence doesn't describe them in any way. Just
Oh, well,
opinions.
what would they say? They say each
you're going to
name
be
is
so, Alex, you're going to be surprised that there are
a
opinions that differ with that.
Right.
I'm not going to be surprised.
I mean, in America, if you name a guy named Bob or John, it often, I'd like to think it doesn't mean much other than maybe somebody's named after. But the name itself, maybe once upon a time in whatever Anglo-Saxon language, it had a meaning. But for Americans,
Named after somebody.
it might be named
Robert.
after, or maybe not. I mean, just like the name.
No meaning
Yeah,
to the
but
word Robert.
I'm looking at two or three name dictionaries that have English names, and it tells you what the background of that name is.
Right.
You know, it's Gaelic for alphabet soup. I'm just making it up.
Is
You know, but
Gaelic like Froelich? They're just happy.
yeah, right. So here, let's see a Gemara reference to anything. That would be good. By the way, we a couple of weeks ago we talked about psukim, that everybody has their pasuk, you know, the beginning with the first and last letters of their name. That's another thing to throw into the basket of how important names are.
There are
We
more than
get to
one pasuk.
Tehillim Kuf Yud Tet, and we're at the graveyard at the cemetery, and we say Tehillim with the letters of the name of the person who passed away. So there's certainly something to this, more than nothing to this. Alex, what were you saying?
There are more than one pasuk sometimes for your name. There's not only one pasuk. There could be more than one
There
that
could be
has your
more than one.
initial.
There could be more than one. On this, in the several lists that I looked at in different places, they were consistent, but there could be more than one.
What, they only showed you one pasuk for two letters?
Yeah. Like when I was looking for my pasuk, you know, beginning with an aleph, ending with a nun,
Yeah.
the four or five references that I looked at all had the same pasuk for
Maybe
that.
there are some, but for that, those two letters, perhaps not. But I know for sure other letters have two or
Okay.
four. Just so happens. It's not one pasuk that everybody can only have.
It's very likely. I'm just saying, in my experience, I just kept finding the same wherever I looked, but
May not be
I'm not
anymore for those two letters. It might be not be anymore. But some
right.
letters have more than one pasuk.
Okay. I accept that. So let's take a look at a piece in Gemara Brachot 7b. The Gemara asks the question, Minalan Dishema Garim. How do we know? Where do we from where do we derive that a person's name has any effect? Garim, grama, ligrom. Minalan de Shema Garim. Where do we know this? Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Lechu chazu miflaot Hashem, asher sam shamot ba'aretz. This is in the Tehillim 49, 46. It says, go see the works of Hashem who has wrought devastations in the land. What is the Hebrew for wrought devastations? I share some shamot, shamot ba'aretz. So, Rabbi Eliezer says, Al tikre shamot, ela shemot. Don't read it as shamot, the devastations. Read it rather as shemot. Rather read it as names. Meaning, go see the works of Hashem who has wrought names into the land. So this is a drasha from Rabbi Eliezer. According to the Maharsha, this means to say, go and see the works of God who has placed names in the land. Namely, God acts in this world in accordance with the names that he has devised for its participants. So what does the Maharsha mean to say? It sounds like he means to say that the one of the ways that Hashem conducts the world is through people with various names. That's in his toolbox. One commentary clarifies this by saying, a parent naming a child does not receive prophecy. However, God inspires him or her to select a particular name that has significance yet unknown to the parent. Now, there are those Chazal who say, oh, yes, when you name a child, you do receive a certain kind of nevuah. This particular commentary, who I didn't see the name, says no, there's no prophecy. Many years later, the aptness of the name may become apparent to everybody. But now, it's still a mystery, but Hashem works his world through people by inspiring parents to give them certain names. The Or HaChaim says this inspiration is not limited to Jews, as Gentiles may be similarly inspired. In other words, non-Jewish parents can also be similarly inspired, divinely inspired, if you will, to give their kids various names as well. They're not Jewish names, but to give them various names. Bamidbar Rabba has this to say, in the merit of four acts of restraint, the Jews were redeemed from Egypt. What were these four acts of restraint? They didn't change their names, as we've heard, Lo Shinu et Shemam, or their language. They didn't change their language while they were in Mitzrayim. They didn't disclose each other's secrets, and they didn't breach barriers of morality. So Bamidbar Rabba just reminds us that one of the things that stood the Jews in good stead, and therefore led to their redemption, one of the things that led to their redemption from Mitzrayim, is the fact that they maintained their names. The Midrash Tanchuma says, if there's one name that you should choose, give it a name fit for a tzaddik. Now, I don't know if I can say a whole lot more about that, but he says sometimes the names can cause good or bad, like the 10 names of the Meraglim who had the negative report. The Midrash Tanchuma says that each of those 10 names, of the ones that came with a not-so-good report, each name contained an element of their name that leaned towards their negative behavior and report. So I did not look at all the 10 names, but the Midrash Tanchuma says if you look at all their names, there are elements of the name which lean towards their negativity. It almost, in a sense, predicts that they're going to come back with not such a positive, glowing kinds of report. So, I just want to add this anecdote about a name. Many years ago, right when we were first, my wife and I were first married, I felt that I wanted to take the first name of an uncle. My father's brother, an uncle who did not survive the Holocaust. I wanted to take his name so that he should have a Yad Vashem in the world somewhere, if you know what I'm saying. Something ought to have survived him on a practical level. I never met him, of course. This was all during the Shoah. And I chose the name, well, it was his name, Yosef. His name was Yosef, Robert Yosef. So at that point, I wanted to add that name to my name and to be called to the Torah, Ilan Yosef. That was my plan. So a few months into our marriage, it was about 27 years ago, across the street from our house, the chazan of the shul in Baltimore had invited a gentleman, a rabbi who was a Kabbalist and was able to look at people's ketubot and tell them certain things about their life looking in the ketubah. How he did this, I don't know. I have a couple of anecdotes, not for now. But I said to him that as of right now, this was 27 years ago, I said to this gentleman, this rabbi, as of right now, I have been unlucky to be able to produce children. My wife had two girls at the time from previous marriage. I have not yet been fortunate to produce children or to impregnate. What do you recommend? And he said, I recommend that you have a second Hebrew name, which I was not born with a second Hebrew name. I was just born with my first name, Ilan. Well, I wasn't born with it, so my parents gave that to me.
I thought you were going to say a second wife for a minute.
See, that was the guy sitting next to him. I should have asked him. He was a lot more practical and always had a smile on his face. Anyway, so he said, I would recommend that you, if this is what you'd like to do, to become a father of your own child, I would recommend that you take a second name that would add to the strength of your being able to produce a child. And he said, I recommend you take the name Yosef. And I said, that's interesting. Yosef was the name of my uncle who I was planning to take as his name. Anyway, but he explained that I would like to suggest the name Yosef so that whatever is lacking in your ability to impregnate, it should be Yosef. This name should add to that ability, to that potential. It should add to that potential for you to impregnate and produce a child. Anyway, so I remember that because that's another example of somebody who believed very, very strongly that one's name has a certain force. Could he have thought of other names? I don't know, but it certainly was very interesting that he chose the same name Yosef as what I wanted to name a second name for me after my uncle, both
You could
Yosef.
say from a psychological perspective, I know you're a psychologist, if someone's
I'm
called,
not a psychologist, but I do a lot of counseling.
so if someone's name is, you call them Fatty.
Call him what?
Fatty.
Uh,
Fatso.
in in uh, elementary school, I was called Pudgy,
Well,
much to my dismay.
so it may lead people to develop a self, reflection of who they are, their self-identity. Can take on what they're being called. If there's a big difference when you have a little dog and you call him King versus Shrimp. But so too with people. I mean, their name might affect how they look at themselves.
So you
And
say
even,
as opposed to like some divine
yeah, I'm trying to say
push.
that there may be an actual, if one would do a study on people's names and who has low self-esteem, could it be related to a name on some levels, or at least a nickname, what they're called? It doesn't matter what you named it, but what people tend to call you might reflect what you think about yourself.
That's very possible. I would love to see something like that. There might be already something out there like that.
And if they called you Pudgy, and
They were not incorrect, by the way, in those days. They were not, yeah.
I also had a story with the Mikubal when one of my children was born. We went to ask him, what does he suggest? He said, put something that says, add light, it'll add light to the world. And we added the name Yair to one of my children.
Beautiful. Yep. Yair.
Yosef has said that everybody should have also the name Yosef. Yosef, that it was added to us because Yosef tzaddik kept the world alive, so each one of us has his name because of that.
Oh.
As the Yosef,
Oh, like Edut be Yosef Samo, that kind of thing. Yosef. Yeah, I think a lot of umpires have that name. When people come in and they say,
You
yep,
safe.
there you go. Thank you so much. Thank you for the follow-up. I appreciate it. Anyway, so here's what the Aruch Chaim has to say. He says, your name is your nefesh. It's your livelihood. It's your very essence. He's not the only one to say that, but I did see that. And many of the ones that say that you're, you know, that the neshama, your neshama and your shem, your name, are very connected, is they look at the middle two words, middle two letters of the word neshama, which are shin mem. Neshama and shem are very, very connected. Adam HaRishon, Adam, was able to name all the animals according to their essence, says Rabbeinu Bachya. How did he know their essence? He was just born then, and must have been born a very superior being. How did he know the essence of an elephant, a cow, an ant? I don't know. I wasn't there, but that's the tradition, that he named animals according to their essence. Tamei haminhagim.
No, but I'm not sure of Midrash Agadot like that are meant to be actually literally taken. I know some people might. I'm just not sure if it must be taken literally.
I think he's adding a he's putting something on the weight of the side that it's important to consider the names, because it's not just a name for now, but it cascades.
No, the name, the idea that Adam HaRishon, or any first man would name an animal and therefore it becomes the name, as opposed to the animal has a certain tom to it and the name reflects what he sees. You know, you can call an elephant a big animal.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that because you called it a big animal, it now becomes a big animal. Or animal with a trunk. And you said it's animal with a trunk, so now it grows a trunk. So the name might again be reflective of what you're seeing, as opposed to, I think what you're implying, that he sort of intuited the inner essence of this animal and
Okay. I hear that. I hear that. Yeah. So the Tamei HaMinhagim, it's a sefer. It's right behind me where I'm sitting. It has all kinds of things to say about various minhagim regarding various categories. It says that when you give your child its name, is when the formed neshama enters. It enters the child, a formed neshama. It enters the child when you give it its name. And this is an essential teaching and central to the celebration of the naming of a girl who gets her full neshama at her naming. Gets her full neshama. There are various minhagim, by the way, to when to name a girl. There are those who do a naming for a girl at the next Torah reading. The wife gave a birth at 4 o'clock on when early Thursday morning. Husband wants to go to sleep a little bit, but he goes to the Neitz Minyan or wherever, and at the first Torah reading Thursday morning, he goes to name the baby. Others wait for the Shabbat closest to the birth of the baby girl. Others wait as soon as the mother can be present. She carried this child for X amount of time, and she ought to be there when the baby girl gets her name. And the Sfardim have a ceremony called the Zeved Habat. Zeved Habat. In order to communicate that the birth of a baby girl is also important, and they wanted to create something very special for that as well. The Arizal says when a father or a parent names the child, it's really Hashem who puts that name into their mouths. So that's a high level of involvement. It's really Hashem who puts the names into their mouths.
So this was the halakhic area. You know, the husband's in the army. He's
Yeah.
not the Brit. And someone else named the baby, maybe his father, a grandfather. When he gets back, he's not happy with the name. Can he just change the name? Or is that name given to the Brit and somehow that's the name?
You mean the grandfather named the baby without any consultation with the
Well, maybe they did, but maybe they didn't have a consultation, or he couldn't reach his son. The son's in the army somewhere. And the grandfather and the wife decided this is the name. And when the father came back from the army, he decided it's not the name he would have given. And He's going to just call the kid by another name and sort of change the name. Like, is that how it works to change the name or something? I mean, because it's, is there a document that the name is written on at the Brit?
There generally is.
So the
Yeah.
baby is
The
written down.
Moyle will create a document of some sort. Could be like a receipt book, that just fill it out for every family, or it could be a big certificate where they sign their name. Usually the rabbi signs it, the parents sign it, then says the Hebrew name of the baby.
Now that just may be like a receipt for the Moyle, but I'm wondering the significance legally or halakhically, or what happens if that father comes back after the army and decides he just doesn't like that name and is changing the name. Meaning he's going to call the baby by another name. I'm not sure what change is halakhically required. Maybe there is no halakhic requirement. Maybe there's no legal requirement.
Well, I can say this. The practices are that if you want to have a different name, then you do it by having people call you that different name for X amount of time, for example, and then you could go by that name. Would anybody imprison you if right away you wanted to go by Shlomit instead of Shulamit? I don't think you're going to be handcuffed for that. Are there rabbis who would say that when the father returns, Yirtzeh Hashem, from the army, and he wants to use the name that he thought of, and nobody consults him, whatever, are there rabbis who would say, he should have had something to do with it, didn't? So yes, he can change the name. I think you are more likely to find those who would say, let's add a name to the baby that the father wanted. So now he's Avram Shmuel Yitzchak, if that's what he wanted. I think there would be a more of a comfort and maybe even more halachically reasonable to add the name that the father wanted as opposed to changing the entire name altogether. And again, it depends. If you ask Mekubalim, if you ask people who are in that kind of a netiyah, that kind of a direction, they hold that whatever the baby's name is, this came from somewhere and it didn't just happen this way. And others might say that's very interesting, but we're still not going to call him Chesky or whatever.
No, whether my friend down the street, when the father gave a name that the parents had not agreed upon, that name stuck. And for whatever reason, the mother was not able to revert to the name that they had agreed upon. When the
She went. She
she was
consulted various rabbanim, and nobody wanted to change the name.
I'm not sure who she consulted. Her husband is a rabbi.
Oh, I see. Oh,
They just
okay.
went and called it after what the father decided, as if to suggest there's some spiritual significance to that name being given at the Brit, and it cannot, alluding to what you're saying earlier, and therefore cannot be changed. Like, that's it. The neshama and the name were bonded at the Brit for all time. And you might add a second name if there's some rationale, but that name stuck. At least as it relates to my neighbor, and they.
Oh, yeah. So, like I said in the very outset, and I'm sure you will find those whose opinions are valuable and valid, who would say you don't have to be such a stickler with that. I would put money that that's so, that there are others who would say, but I stand corrected. It could be that nobody would say, oh yeah, could just go change it. But from everything I saw that had a, like a point counterpoint. This one says this, and this one says no. And they're in a sense equally valid. These are poskim, these are, knowledgeable people.
I know on my left, I thought my mother's name was Joni, Yehudit. No one ever said otherwise. People made, let's say, Misha Barracks for her, things of this sort. After her passing, my brother and I learned that her name was not Joni or Yehudit. It was Miriam Yehudit. And she simply didn't like Miriam, or her mother didn't like Miriam. So she went by Joni and Yehudit. And it was only after her passing.
Wow. Yeah, my wife's grandfather, father, grandfather, they had the wrong names on the tombstone. So every year we go to Florida to see my sister-in-law, and we go out to the cemetery, the Beth David Cemetery, whatever it is. And then they had to change it because they found out those were not the right names. They changed the names on the stone, and yeah, that's a great day when we go out to the cemetery. I'm saying about 15 different Ke'amaleh Rachamims all over the cemetery, Hebrew, English. The money's not so good, but I think I'm doing a nice thing.
People would be upset if
Anyways.
you mentioned the wrong name, right?
The what?
Would people be upset if you mentioned the wrong name or that you had her in mind? It's kind of like, again, the name seems to be very important in those on those situations.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
mean, they'll withhold the big payment.
Yes. Thank God in all my rabbinic career, I never bobbled a Hebrew name. Never.
I have a cousin who, when he was born, there was he has two names, so one from his mother's side, one from his mother's side, and there was a big fight in the family. So he's I'm not sure to this day what they said at his bris because I wasn't there. He's older than me, but it's either Yaakov Tzvi or Tzvi Yaakov, and depending on who's speaking to him, that's the name they use.
Yeah, right.
So yeah.
Right. Well, here's an interesting after whom we're to those who are just joining with us, been with us for a while, we're talking about baby namings. Who, what, when, where, how, all that. Naming a baby. An interesting way, after whom is it appropriate to name the baby? Can you name the baby after someone who died young or had a hard life or not a very successful life? I don't speak Yiddish. There's a term, imglick, umglick, imglick. Is there something like that?
It's unlucky. Imglick.
Unlucky, right?
Yeah.
Glickless.
Yeah.
Somebody had a very difficult, hard, challenging life. A Holocaust victim. What's the feeling about naming a baby in these categories, people in these categories?
No, but Ashkenazim don't name after the living, but what if they did? I mean, I know one of my daughters is Leora Mirren, and I later found out about, my mother, that I thought that was her middle name. Anyway, I asked my mother about some
You
and
asked your mother what?
whether I can use the name Leora Miriam, because Miriam was in my mother's name, but it was also my wife's grandmother's name, who
Right.
had no longer alive. That's the one we had in mind. And I got permission from my mother to use the name. I asked first, but as if there was, a need to do
Yeah.
that. And so what happens when Ashkenazi just goes and names after the living? Is there some pagam? Is there some
Well, we'll get to
shamayim? There is a thought that a name, a person has two names, that's the name. It's like if first name is Avram Yitzchak. So, and his grandfather is Avraham, and he's still alive. It's not the same name. Avraham Yitzchak is a different name than Avraham. But
and they would say that a different there's a different Gezerah, if you will, for this new name. Like
that's
very
right.
often, people add a name, change a name. Somebody's very, very ill. And the feeling is that the old Gezerah applied to the old name, and now there's a new lease on life from Yirtzeh Hashem with this new name there, because the old Gezerah doesn't apply to this new name.
I know that my son is very careful to call his children by both their names.
Because if you give someone
Vilda Chaya, like Vilda Chaya. Those are
Well,
two
it's
beautiful.
actually one of the names is
Oh,
Kaya,
nice.
but no, it's
Yeah.
not Vilda.
There is a name you're
So
supposed to do that. You're supposed to, if you have more than one name, that's the name you should be called by. We don't do it, but
Yeah.
that's what's supposed to be. Looking back, you shouldn't have given them the names you didn't intend to call them by before.
Right.
Well, this is
Yeah,
all
there's.
custom. We're discussing custom now, as opposed to halacha.
I don't
Yeah.
know. See, this is what I was saying in the very beginning. I don't, considering everything I looked at and listened to over the last week, I didn't see anything that says this is the way it must. Now, according to the ones who say this is what I feel, they would say this is a must because this, but I saw most of these as guidelines. And again, I stand corrected. But from everything I heard and read and studied, these are more guidelines. For example,
Guideline sounds like a custom.
don't name a child after somebody who died young. So what is young? Young is young. Some
No,
say it means anybody before the age of 50. Some say
but
it's before the age of 60.
in Jewish
In
in
neither category am I young, so I didn't particularly care to read those.
Jewish speak, I don't think we use the word guideline. We use custom. That's the custom
Custom.
to do. I mean, that sounds more, and custom can be very powerful.
Yeah.
Guideline is like a suggestion.
So
About it.
we'll call it a custom that has import. You know? Like if you put chopped nuts in your charoset because it's a custom, so, but does it have import with or without walnuts? But in cases of a baby naming, there seems to be tremendous import if you go this way or that way, if you allow this or that. So I read an opinion that said naming after someone who died childless should be avoided. Now, I'm not happy to read that because I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, our two daughters are from my wife's previous marriage. Both girls call me Abba. And, you know, they have a father who's alive, but they, thank God, give me tremendous kavod and stuff like that. And they call me their Abba. But technically, I'm childless because I have not produced a child. So am I happy to hear that I should not be named? After, so nobody should be named after me. I plan on not dying anyway, and you know, Mashiach will come before then. But were it to be that I pass away, you know,
By the way,
you were muted there.
if they called you pudgy, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah,
Neil Young was forever young. So
there you go.
name your kid
Beautiful.
Neil. Name your kid Neil.
There you go. Without the K. Bereishit Rabbah. It reminds us that during the times of Tanakh and Tanaim and Amoraim, they would choose the name based on occurrences that happened as part of the family history, but they were not so intimate. Nowadays, we're not so intimate with our family histories, though some are very intimate with their family histories. If you listen to some stories at Shiva houses about the one who passed away, there are individuals who know every jot and tittle of the family history of that person, namely because they're interested to know, and they've been interested to know, and they can tell you from A to Z. And there are others who just know like Roshei Prakim about the person's life. This happened. This was a big thing. This was a big thing. But the general sense is that nowadays, we don't know so much about vast family histories. And so we choose names a little bit differently. Rabban Gamliel says we lack Ruach HaKodesh, and so we name after parents and grandparents. If we had Ruach HaKodesh, we might name even further back. And some poskim say that naming after parents is a matter of kibud av va'em deoraita, and the Torah Tamima agrees with that you should your first the first line of naming should be after parents and grandparents. Does that mean you can't name after others? No, it just that this is their opinion. Rabban Gamliel, Torah Tamima. So now we touched upon this before. We have a few moments left. Ashkenazim generally named after deceased relatives, Sfardim after living relatives generally. Many say it's not only permitted, it's preferable in the Sfardim, preferable to name after the living, as it brings long life to the child and the one after whom it is named in the Sephardi community. Ashkenazim feel at the opposite, that it could endanger the child and endanger the namesake by naming after a living person. Some Ashkenazi poskim permit naming after living relatives to the exclusion of the parent. You may not name. According to some Ashkenazi poskim, you may not name after a living parent, but you can name after living other relatives. And the
Maybe name.
Yemenites, I just mentioned the Yemenites, they have a custom to name after themselves. That's the
Maybe
Yemenites.
naming after someone that passed away, your returning them to the world, so to speak, in their at least with the memory of that person. And if you name after the living, maybe it's out of kavod. I mean, you're extending the life of the living by passing it on to the new bit to this new person with the same name. So they both have a
I think in
strong
general that's
rationale.
how the Sephardim feel. In general, I can't speak for them, but I think that's this. While the Ashkenazim may say, "No, you're draining something from the living." So you say, "What are you draining? What are you draining?" I don't know. I don't know exactly, but they would say that you're somehow removing some life force from the living by naming after the living. There's something
Oddly enough, we
you're
don't.
impacting their life, lifespan.
Oddly enough, we don't say, "Do what you think is better." I mean, choose your, like, it's A or B, vanilla or chocolate. Which do you prefer? Somehow, Ashkenazim generally do not, if not generally, maybe all the time, do not name after the living, and Sephardim, maybe they always do. So it's not like either one is okay.
No, the Ashkenazim, as far they have very, very specific feelings about it and reasons behind it. They're just not, they're not ready to treat this lightly. I think that's the bottom line. Naming for a dead person, people would say, continues their legacy, their imprint in the world. As we see, like in the case of Yibum, where it's important to have a name continue. So it's good for the child, it's good for the neshama of the deceased. And naming after a name in the parsha is also recommended. And there are those that say that would even be preferable. Preferable to anything else is Noam Elimelech says, in his commentary in Parshat Bamidbar, it's a very worthy practice to name after somebody in the Parsha. Interesting. Anybody know anyone named Harvona? Who is Zachor Latov? But does anybody know anybody with that name, Harvona? No, I never met anybody with that name.
Eliyahu.
It's like naming your kid Sue. He's going to get hit a lot.
That's right. That's what was that? Johnny Cash? Was that his name?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But now it's Ashrei.
Harvona is really just an opportunist. So if you're not an opportunistic person, you might give him that nickname.
So let's. I see. I have about a couple of minutes, and David is on the line. Who gets the privilege of naming which child? First child, second child, third child. It's a whole to do.
Always the wife.
Period, right? Period. It's always the wife. That's a good answer. I found this in several places. Regarding naming in general, a key point is to avoid conflict about it, avoiding fights and resentments about how and what to name. The Kaf HaChaim says that fighting about the name, not just a mild disagreement, but an actual fight, people don't talk to each other because of that, it can cause great harm, sakana, to the newborn. And having shalom with the name is a high value. Suggesting that it's good to give a little compromise here and there. Anything is better than having a family split apart because of the name. That's not worth it. And it has ramifications to the neshama, the life of the newborn. I'll say this, the last thing. Avoid giving the child a name that will cause shame or embarrassment or ridicule, like a boy named Sue, such as the nickname of someone or a complicated name or a funny sounding name. The Shita Mekubetzet says, carrying an embarrassing name is like a mum. It's worse than a physical scar or a blemish to give somebody an embarrassing kind of a name. I'll close by saying that we had neighbors in Maale Adumim. They had, I think, seven, eight kids. Each kid had the most complicated name. I can't even remember the names. I just remember every time I heard it, that complicated. And we asked the parents, why did you name your kid? You know, Hebrew names, double Hebrew name. Why did you name them such complicated Hebrew names? And they said that was our way of assuring that they would not move to Chutz La'aretz, because everybody would make fun of those names, and that they would want to stay in Israel where people would not make fun of those names.
Hashem told the Navi to
Seriously?
That's what they said.
Better mentally disturbed and emotionally disturbed in Israel than healthy in Kutzlar.
No, they were not mentally disturbed in Israel. They were typical, not typical. They were way off kinds of names, but in Israel, acceptable
Okay.
names. But once they go to schools, Hebrew school, yeshivas, so what's your name? And they would say that name. It would cause a giggle and a titter. That was their explanation.
The best name I ever came across. There's a guy in Shalavim when I was there. His name was Clonimus. I love that name.
Was it Colonimus?
Clonimus.
It's a Jewish name. But
Yeah.
Hashem told a Navi, I think it was
Greek.
Hoshaya, to name the three kids very strange names, as you remember. What's those names, David? The three children of Hoshaya?
I don't remember. I just remember Lo Ruchama. I just
Right.
remember Lo Ruchama. I don't remember the others.
Right.
Oh,
Anyway, never
interesting.
mind. Thank you very much, Rabbi Adler.
Thank you
Let's
very
talk
much, all you
to
who came today. You should be happy, healthy, and safe. Have a great week. Shabbat Shalom.
you. We'll see you
And
tonight.
we'll see you tonight, those of you who can join us at 7:30. Otherwise, we will see you, God willing, next Thursday.